No church is an island, entire in itself. Every church is a piece of the continent, a part of the main. Our congregation and every congregation moves within larger cycles, the cycles of the seasons and the cycles of society. We're in the spring cycle of the seasons of the liturgical year. Our annual meeting is coming up. New budgets have been planned. New officers springing like new buds from the ground. Perhaps new bylaws. And we also find our congregation within the larger cycles of society and the cycles of history. The cycles of our history as a Unitarian church founded in 1852, within the cycles of Unitarian Universalist history, within the cycles of American history, and so on. And so it is all fitting and proper that we have a new member recognition ceremony at this time of the year. It follows a seasoned cycle that tells us it's a time of new things developing, new growth, new opportunity. It's a fun time to watch. The warmth approaches, slowly sometimes, but approaches. We also, as a Unitarian church, follow somewhat the vestiges, at least, of the Christian calendar. On the Christian calendar, this is the second Sunday of Pentecost. Pentecost follows after Easter, and Pentecost indicates the descending of Christ's Spirit upon his disciples. Now, however you want to interpret that in a Christian context, it was the time when the crucifixion and the resurrection had been far enough apart that people who followed Jesus were beginning to forget about him. So a special effort was made to recall his Spirit and to act in his Spirit. Very significant time in the Christian calendar. The second Sunday of Pentecost is specifically called Trinity Sunday, to remember that part of Christian doctrine that says that Jesus and his Father and the Holy Spirit are one. So if in the Christian calendar this is Trinity Sunday, then perhaps for us it should be Unity Sunday, a time to remember the union of the Creator and the creation, or as Paul Simon said, the mother and father, mother and child reunion, yes. So let's take time to act upon the truth that all consciousness has meaning, all consciousness is connected, all consciousness is one. And so, in this spirit, we have agreed to participate in the welcoming of new members. Now, the good news for the new members is there's nothing to memorize. There's no creeds. There's no doctrines. There's no degree or ceremony you can do now that makes you more of a Unitarian Universalist than anybody else. But like Unitarian Universalism and the music of Johnny Cash, just because it's simple, don't mean it's easy. We are not a do-it-yourself religion, but a do-it-with-a-little-help-from-your-friends religion. And that friendship, that fellowship, our being together as human beings, is really no harder and no easier than being in a group of any other human beings. Now, this can be a disappointment to some of us at times, as you find out that we are indeed human. This can be a disappointment even to Unitarian Universalists who have been members for decades. Sometimes we work together and have amazing experiences, and sometimes we fight each other or hurt each other or ignore each other and cause each other pain. So my advice to the new members and those not so new, hang in there. Hang in there in respectful relationships with each other, and we can become as good as we hope, not as bad as we fear. and being in relationship, in respectful relationship to each other, is the key. I'm reminded that the trick within a congregation is that at any time when we gather, we manifest two polarizing aspects of community. One, we need to be as comfortable as we are at home, but also to realize that we're welcoming new people who have never been here before. Now, when we're in our homes, we don't have to do that. We can walk around in our bathrobes and flip-flops and scream at each other across the room as much as we want. But when new people come, we, you know, put on our penny loafers and, you know, our best linen and act a little differently. And in church, we don't have that privilege. We somehow have to be both at the same time. That's the challenge. The second cycle in which our congregation moves is the cycle of the larger society, whether it's the neighborhood outside our door or all of Staten Island or all of New York City or all of the United States or the world. There is a human tendency to believe and act as though what is happening in your neighborhood is happening only in your neighborhood. But communication today is showing us that local events everywhere are connected. It is not only in the USA that politics are being threatened by a rise in fear, isolationism, sectarianism, bigotry, and injustice. It is not only in Staten Island that law enforcement people are being given more and more responsibility and less support. It is not only our spring weather that seems bizarre here, but weather patterns everywhere. It was 128 in New Delhi this week. It is not only in the United States that the few prosper and the many suffer. And within that cycle of society, this congregation acts and exists, and also within the cycles of its own history. In 1852, we were founded by New England Unitarian abolitionists, many of whom had been in the congregation of the Reverend Theodore Parker, the minister who gave to both Martin Luther King and President Obama the phrase, "The arc of history is long, but bends toward justice." And if you've read anything about the life and personality of Theodore Parker, you know that at the time he was preaching freedom and abolition, he was barred from the pulpits of most of the Unitarian churches. Now, he was not exactly what you'd call a hail fellow well met. He had a curmudgeonly personality. He kept a pistol in his office because his church was a stop on the Underground Railroad. He gathered Universalists around him and confronted slave owners who were trying to recapture some of their slaves who had gone north. Also in our history is our member Robert Gould Shaw, who led the first regiment of black soldiers into combat in the Civil War. And their bravery was central to convincing the North that that terrible war wasn't just and couldn't just be about union. It was about freedom. The noble example of those black men dying showed everybody what people of color were willing to do for their freedom, what they were capable of doing. But you know, Robert Gould Shaw grew up in this church, but he never joined. I think when he came, they thought he'd already been a member. But you can imagine When the Civil War broke out in 1860, he was at Harvard. And I'm sure they were just wondering how to attract the younger generation to their church at the time. And if you read his correspondence, his parents were zealous, zealous abolitionists. And he wrote to his parents, "Just because I don't talk about slavery all the time, like you do, doesn't mean I don't believe as you do. Nyah, nyah, nyah." And when at age 25, the opportunity, or rather the responsibility, of leading the first all-black regiment into combat, he wasn't that thrilled with the idea. He was 25 years old. I don't think he was thrilled about leading a regiment into combat, period. I don't think he was that thrilled about going into combat. But he did. And as he got to know the man, he accepted what a rare opportunity they had together. It was for them toward a new kind of freedom that America has yet to fully embrace. And that is why today, in the church where he grew up, we dedicate a banner that says, "Black Lives Matter." An effort supported by the Unitarian Universalist Association. Something over 70 Unitarian Universalist congregations have displayed such a banner. About 70 out of 1,000. So I wonder, is that cup 7% full or 94% empty? Well, in 1860, there weren't many abolitionist Unitarian congregations either. Abolition was considered too radical, the leaders too experienced and unbalanced, the goals unrealistic, the opposition too strong, public opinion against them. Now, I don't know what is ahead of us as a Black Lives Matter congregation. I do remember that members of this church fled back to Massachusetts during the draft riots because, as our member George Curtis, for whom our high school is named, said, "I flee because I have nothing to protect myself other than this large and inadequate umbrella." He rightly feared how others in Staten Island would respond to his actions. I don't know if we have anything to fear or not. What I have gleaned about Black Lives Matter thus far is it is led by black, gay, and transgender women. It is reclaiming the place of forgotten leadership of black women that have led in every movement toward racial equality. While it stresses black lives, it also sees the connection amongst racism, sexism, homophobia, and economic injustice, that there is one oppression with many tentacles. For Unitarian Universalists, Black Lives Matter is a way to express our followership, to listen, not just to speak, and certainly not to speak for, but to help make the voiceless voices heard. Black Lives Matter is not about making anybody unsafe, but it is about making some folks uncomfortable. Thus, here is my answer for now about the bottom line for me in this movement. Black Lives Matter. No, all lives matter. Well, yeah. Of course all lives matter. But it seems to me we often don't act like they do. It seems to me that this society often acts like black lives in particular don't matter. So I'm going to give a special shout out to black lives so that all lives can really matter. Now, I've also been told that the real existence of this movement is most profoundly on Twitter. Now, I'm not exactly an early adopter. I've just recently perfected the felt tip pen. So I guess I got to do more than get a Twitter login name and a password. I actually have to figure out how to use it. And that's also why we have begun, once again, to reach out to other people and other groups beyond our congregation for how we can help and how they can help us. Many of them, I find, are led by people of at least a generation, if not two, younger than most of us. So this is a challenge and also an opportunity. And so finally, we see the intersection of these two cycles, the seasons of membership and welcoming, and the seasons of a new cycle of history bending its arc toward justice. And if you have joined us, you have joined that Black Lives Matter church. If that feels good, I'm glad. If that feels a little uncomfortable, we are with you. I also know that there are and will be some who otherwise share our values, who will not join because of this banner. That's inevitable. But in 1860, the parents of Robert Gould Shaw might have suggested that those folks go to Manhattan and join the Church of All Souls, where its minister was recommending that their members obey the law of the land, the fugitive slave law. It will not be hard for any person on Staten Island of any religious belief to find a place of worship without a Black Lives Matter banner, or who did not have in their congregation ancestors who were abolitionists. Then they can feel comfortable to support freedom and equality from a safe distance, or when perhaps it becomes more fashionable to do so, or when the black leaders have come up to the high standards of white leaders. Theodore Parker gave another phrase to American history. In a speech called The American Idea, he spoke it at the New England Anti-Slavery Convention in Boston, the 29th of May, 1850, 1 week short of 166 years ago. It shows how ideas grow not from some abstract truth that automatically advances them, but by courage and commitment and blood. It took 14 years for Parker's phrase to become part of the American soul. And we stand with him today, as he said. There is what I call the American idea. I so name it because it seems to me to lie at the basis of all our truly original, distinctive, and American institutions. It is itself a complex idea, composed of three subordinate and more simple ideas. Namely, the idea that all people have inalienable rights, that in respect thereof, all people are created equal, and that government is to be established and sustained for the purpose of giving every person an opportunity for the enjoyment and development of all these inalienable rights. This idea demands a democracy. That is, a government of all people, by all people, and for all people. Of course, a government after the principles of eternal justice, the unchanging law of God. For shortness' sake, I will call it the idea of freedom.